Hello, and welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Rebecca Christie, a senior fellow here at Bruegel and also the Europe columnist for Reuters Breaking Views, and I will be your host today. I am delighted to join you today with two of our fellows here at Bruegel, Marek Dombrowski, who is a non-resident fellow and was involved in the Polish transition away from communism from 1989 to 1990. He was deputy finance minister. And Paweł Karbownik, a visiting fellow who has been an advisor to former European Council and former Polish leader Donald Tusk. We are here to talk about the Polish elections that took place on October 15th and which showed Tusk and his coalitions with a decent chance of getting back into government. And we hope today we will talk a little bit about what's going to happen and what you can expect and what you might make of it. So thanks very much for joining us. Paweł, would you like to start us out by explaining what just happened and what we can look forward to in the next 5-6 weeks?
I think a democratic miracle happened because millions of young voters showed up to the polling stations. They were waiting. Some of them were waiting up until 3 a.m. in the morning. People were randomly delivering pizzas, coffee, tea, so that they could still keep up in long queues through the night. And it's actually quite impressive to see that we've had the highest turnout in history, over 74%. So I think there is a big political change and a big political mandate.
And what happened to this turnout? How did they vote?
Well, I think they voted pro-European because Europe was at the center of these elections. We've had a visa scandal and we've had border checks being reintroduced on the borders with Germany and Slovakia. And people basically saw that the current government is losing control and that the fear of Polexit is not something unreal.
So the current government is known in English as the Law and Justice Party. They've been in power since
2015.
So they've been in power for almost 8 years. And they have picked a bunch of fights with Europe while they've been at it and really focused on nationalist ideas. There has been a dispute with Brussels over the courts, as I understand it, over media laws and over access to European funding. And so part of this election was a chance for Polish voters to express how they felt about Europe, how they felt about women's rights, how they felt about migration, a lot of these things, and also how they felt about inflation and the economy. Marek, can you tell us how the economy was positioned going into this election?
Well, the economic situation steadily deteriorated in the last couple of years. Law and justice benefited from the good macroeconomic and general economic situation which they inherited in 2015. But due to populist policies, we have now the situation that we have one of the highest inflations in the EU and also growth close to zero. So Poland has typical stagflation now. And it's a lot of other distortion created by this government, partly just to satisfy some party lobbyists, some sometimes private interests of party groups, party functionaries, and some other just giving up to some populist pressures to gain more votes, more popularity. Quite typical situation, which we could observe not only in some European countries, but also very much in emerging market economies over the last 50 years.
Yeah. And so the results of this election, as I understand it, Law and Justice got the most votes of any one party, but not enough to maintain control of the parliament. So we are now waiting to find out who will get the first chance to form a government. And then we are waiting to see what coalition emerges and whether, in fact, Tusk's coalition will take over. Paweł, is that the case?
So just to come back for a second to the previous question, when it comes to the roots of the failure, certainly the cost of living crisis. I mean, cost of living, this is how we call it in Europe these days. But basically, we are talking about inflation, obviously. The accumulated inflation over the years under this government and the mismanagement of the economic and monetary policy, especially in Poland over the few years, led to an inflation of around 50%. And this has created huge tensions.
50-5-0 or 1-5?
50, no, close to 50-5-0.
That's a lot.
That's a lot. And that's been felt by people, and even the huge social benefits that the government was giving away didn't cater for these increases. So people felt that something's wrong here. And when it comes to the second question, I mean, Law and Justice was first, and they lost approximately around 400,000 voters compared to last election, which is not a big change. But what happened was that, as I told you in the beginning, we've had millions of new voters, the so-called Generation Z, who showed up to the polling stations, and we've had over 4 million new voters voting for the opposition parties, and this brought a change. And those youngsters were driven by issues like climate crisis. Where Tusk is now very progressive, given his experience in Europe and what he's seen. For example, when he was visiting Greenland, how the glaciers were melting, he was telling about it to the voters during the campaign that, you know, we have to take care about the climate crisis. He was talking a lot about educational reform, about the radical change of bringing the number of days at schools to 4 days of teachings and 1 day for creative arts, for sports, for culture, for understanding the world. So these kind of new ideas that he brought to the table of Polish politics, they made impression on people, and we could see it in the meetings with him. I mean,
right. But we are going to come back to that, because right now, just for people who are tuning in, we want to go over what happened in the election. So the Law and Justice Party came in first. They might get a chance to form a government, but we don't know yet. And then Tusk, how many parties is he working with? And how long is it going to take for us to know if he ends up becoming prime minister again?
So there are three parties, out of which Tusk's party is the biggest, of the so-called democratic opposition, who are now in very intense talks among the leaders. These are just the leaders who are discussing the new government at the moment. So we have a Civic Platform of Tusk and his coalition, which is a coalition of smaller parties, also one liberal party, one something like FDP in Germany, one social democratic party, not a big one, and the fourth party of Tusk's coalition are the Greens.
So these four parties.
These four parties just constitute his coalition.
His coalition.
And then there are two other parties, the so-called Third Way, which is a mixture of peasant party and also liberals, and they are very much frugal oriented. And the last, the smallest part of the coalition is the center-left, which got quite poor result in these elections. But still, overall, those three parties, they have 248 MPs, which is a huge majority, because normally you need 231 MPs to form a government. So this is a very stable majority. And
when will we find out if they get a chance, or do we have to wait for Law and Justice to try to form a coalition, maybe with a hard right party first? Do we have to go through that process?
So now the president has invited all the parties to some consultations next week. And based on these consultations, the president will have a power to give a mandate to form a government, either to Law and Justice, which certainly doesn't have majority and will not be able to form a government. But for purely political reasons, internal political reasons, this may happen, which means that it will take some weeks. Or the president may choose to respect the outcome of the elections as it is and give the mandate to Donald Tusk to form a government.
So he can choose. And the president is affiliated with the outgoing government.
Yes.
Marek, Do you think there would be economic rewards for Poland if it moved faster to change governments? Or do you think the markets are waiting and seeing? What does it mean in the broader context to have this change happening right now? Or possible change?
Markets already reacted optimistically in terms of the capital inflow to the Warsaw Stock Exchange and also strengthening of the Polish currency. But looking ahead, there is quite a lot serious challenges. Personally, I think that the date of forming new government is not so much important. Of course, it would be better to have new democratic government earlier than later. But this is, I think, now up to President Duda to make decision what he wants to, what kind of policy line he wants to follow. I am more concerned about future. First kind of concerns relate to the balance of power. Paweł mentioned that majority is substantial, 248, but it is short of 60% of seats which are needed to overcome presidential veto. So if President Duda will continue to be pro-law and justice party politicians, he may quite effectively block a lot of legislative decision, not only related to economics. It's very important to underline that one of the key topics in campaign and also one of the key reasons why majority of the society decided to give negative vote to law and justice was attempts to build autocratic regime by this party, to dismantle check and balances in the justice system, in media, in civil society, etc. And reversing these autocratic changes will require definitely legislation. And here is a big question, how it can go forward. The same concerns also all economic initiatives like budget, like any legislation which is needed to improve economic situation. But another concern which I have is related to what politically the new democratic coalition will be ready to do. Because opposition party, democratic parties, they try to overbid in some respects the law and justice populistic promises, promising more expenditures, lower taxation, also some special solution, which mean actually more economic distortion. And the big question is whether they will be ready to recognize the economic reality, which will require a lot of unpopular decision. Unfortunately, in this respect, probably some similarity between Poland 2023 and Poland of 1989. Not so much, but also, it will require quite a lot of unpopular decisions.
And we will come back to that after a short break. Thanks for joining us. Welcome back to The Sound of Economics. I'm here with Paweł Karbownik and Marek Dąbrowski to talk about the October 15th Polish elections. We were just talking about what we can expect from the new government and what the challenges will be politically and also economically. There seems to be an overlap on that because the political debate with Europe about what is required to be a free society has resulted in a standoff over the EU budget. So economically, there's an issue there. Pavel, do you think there'll be more progress on the areas where the EU has withheld funds just because people really would like to see this money?
Yes. So actually, this concerns the question about the president. And as I've said in the beginning, these elections were a major shift on the political scene and something unprecedented. The fact that we've seen millions of young voters who basically trusted the system and went to the polling stations means that we have a new kind of quality of democratic situation in Poland. So those people voted for democracy and for the rule of law. And the rule of law is the obvious condition to restore the RRF funds for Poland. And also cohesion funds, which are being also threatened.
RRF is the post-pandemic recovery and resilience funding from the EU?
Yes, that's it. And now the question is, what will the president do in this new political situation, given how many people showed up to the votes and how many people showed that they want the rule of law, they want Europe. And if the president is able to disregard legislation that will basically bring institutions like the Constitution Tribunal, the highest court, and other parts of judiciary, whether he will be able to veto changes that are basically bringing our democracy back, I don't believe he will be able to do that, because how would he explain it to the people? I mean, I don't see it, frankly speaking.
So you think they want the changes, and also the money would make a difference. Marek, how important is the EU money to what Poland is trying to do to invest in its economy and recover from this period of slow growth and high inflation?
Definitely, this money is important, especially for investment, public investment, both on national and also regional and local level, because since Poland's accession to EU in 2004, this was the main source of financing public investment, like in other new member states. But I think that, and perhaps I will repeat my previous point, equally important is putting order in domestic public finances. Now it's record high fiscal deficit this year, over most probably over 5%, even perhaps worse. It's a growing public debt despite high inflation, which moderates this process of debt growth to GDP, but not enough to stop this process. So I think that both legs will be very important. First, trying to meet conditionality, which is important for getting money from a new generation EU, but also from the regular budget. And on the other hand, also putting domestic house in order, which again, this will not be politically easy process, especially in the context of two next election round.
So Poland will go back to the polls next year. And you mentioned conditionality, which is what Poland has to do to get the money from the EU. I'd love to hear more from you about the tension between what Brussels is expecting and what Polish voters are expecting. Because as you say, this is going to be very difficult, and Tusk is going to have to account to the people who voted him in and not just to people outside.
I would not make contradiction, oppose the will of majority of voters in Poland to the so-called Brussels. My point in domestic discussion and is that Poland is part of the EU. It's not something which some external bloc or body which Poland must negotiate. So very important is that the new government must assume the active role in shaping European agenda, especially in such crucial things like migration, which Paweł mentioned, or the institutional forthcoming institutional reform on EU enlargement. But the issue which are related to the fund conditionality, meaning respect for the rule of law, democracy, minority rights, etc., there are both in the interest of the Polish society as in the entire EU. So I don't see here a contradiction. The problem is that if presidents wants to continue supporting law and justice policy line and uses actively veto power, this may slow down the entire process of rebuilding rule of law. And then, of course, there is question whether Poland can get quickly the EU money.
Slow it down, but not prevent it, right? Because the president only has less than a year to go. And what happens then? How is a new president
chosen?
Almost
2 years. His term will end in August 2025. It's quite a lot of time, unfortunately. And also the Law and Justice Pact institution like Constitutional Court, Supreme Court, National Bank of Poland with its own representatives, very often absolutely without sufficient professional competence. And the term of these bodies is also quite long. For example, the case of National Bank of Poland is going up to 2028. The question is, of course, how these people who were selected by Law and Justice will behave, whether they will want to continue some sort of party loyalty or will accept new reality and try to be cooperative. I don't rule out this possibility in some cases, but this is a big question.
Yeah, we've seen it already in the few past days that people are changing. Also those people who worked for the government, including the president, who was expected to give the mandate to the current Prime Minister Morawiecki already this week, but apparently he decided to consult these other democratic parties and the Law and Justice next week formally to decide what he will do. So there is a change in Poland, and I just want to recall that Poland before Law and Justice, because this is quite dark history now, thank God. Poland has been at the center of European affairs for many, many years. We've had a very successful presidency in 2011. We've shaped the European response to the first Russian aggression in Ukraine. Basically, it was our idea to focus on those sanctions that hit Russian long-term growth, namely the access to capital and transfer of technology, instead of sanctioning trade, which was the initial idea of the European Commission. And actually, based on our experience back from communism and how the Soviet Union was dismantled, we provided analysis to the point that sanctioning trade makes no difference. We should sanction capital and technology. So basically, Poland will be back at the table and will be a very constructive player and a very responsible one, because the Prime Minister, Donald Tusk, he will be probably the most experienced leader around the table of the European Council along Emmanuel Macron, given that he's been there for 5 years and he's dealt with migration crisis, Greek crisis, Trump administration, Brexit negotiations. So he has tremendous experience that he will bring to the table. And I think this is invaluable for the EU, given what challenges we are facing these days with war in Ukraine, with apparent war in Middle East, with post-pandemic recovery, with economic fragility of not only Europe, but also the US and China. So I think, this is quite fortunate that we will have quite responsible and very experienced player from the east of Europe around the table. So, and I don't think that the European Commission or Europe would hesitate to recognize the fact that there has been a major change for democracy in Poland. And this major change obviously necessitates EU funding to help the country face the economic challenges as all the other EU countries are facing.
When we come back, we'll talk about Poland's role on the broader stage. In the last section of our podcast today, I'd like to talk about how Poland is going to run foreign policy, both within Europe and also looking toward the war in Ukraine and transatlantic relations and a lot of the other areas where Europe is going to have to find agreement and show some leadership. Marek, maybe you could start this conversation by explaining how Poland joined the EU and was sort of at the forefront of this group of countries that joined in the last round of enlargement, and what that might mean for the next round, or rounds, plural, of enlargement that we have coming up.
All governments in Poland, including Law and Justice government, were pro-enlargement. But experience of the last few months demonstrated, in case of Law and Justice, it was to some extent only declarative, because the conflict with Ukraine, not only about grain imports, but also about some other things, some, I would say, not really very important historical problems, demonstrated the nationalist interests and sometimes very, very, very narrow economic interest groups were put forward in front of this strategic goals. So here I absolutely agree with Pavel. I expect that the new government, especially given personality and experience of the most likely new prime minister, will return on this path of being not only receiver of EU funds, but also of co-owner and co-author of the European policy, in particular towards future members in like Ukraine, Moldova, Georgia, but also Western Balkan countries. But also I hope personally, here I am not sure, that the new government will also be able to play more constructive and active role in setting the broader agenda. I already mentioned the migration, which is, I think, the experience of the last couple of years demonstrates that this is a problem which affects practically all EU member states. But then also things which I think also are becoming increasingly clear, that EU needs a new round of institutional reform, especially more qualified majority voting, less veto power of member states. Here it will be difficult because traditionally governments of Poland were rather reluctant to such idea, but I think that I hope that the new government will realize that to move forward in the area, especially of common foreign security policy, the entire EU will need this kind of reforms.
Do you think it matters that Ukraine has suddenly become the biggest and most prominent candidate to join the EU next over some of the smaller countries that have been waiting for a couple of decades now?
It's hard to predict at this point. I am now participating in the one of Bruegel projects about really trying to assess impact of the potential Ukrainian accession on the entire EU. And it's a lot of question also regarding timing. So I would not like speculate. Actually, there are at least few Western Balkan countries which are more advanced in the accession process. Let me mention Montenegro, for example. So I don't exclude that before Ukraine joins the EU, will be some other new members, but it doesn't change the general picture and challenge that EU must be prepared for having more than 30 member countries instead of the current 27. And even among current 27, we just learned painfully that some egoistic behavior of individual governments may really harm the pan-European agenda, whether this is enlargement, like unfortunate experience of North Macedonia, for example, or whether this is respect for the rule of law. Here I would mention Hungarian government and outgoing Poland's government, or, for example, migration pact and many other things, which so here I still have hope that personal experience of the forthcoming prime minister will play a positive role in some way reshaping Polish attitude to the EU from, I would say, consuming philosophy towards more responsibility or co-responsibility for the entire union.
Right. Pavel, yeah.
I couldn't agree more. I think there will be a major there'll be a major change in philosophy from the current philosophy that Brussels is them to a philosophy which is much more connected to the reality, which is Brussels is us. I mean, we are part of the EU. We are, you know, able to shape EU decisions, and basically, this is our place to be.
Would you say Poland had a good experience in its accession?
Yes, actually, very good experience. We've had fantastic economic results. We've been best performing in terms of absorption of accession funds, in terms of market penetration, the benefits from the single market, also remittances. So we've actually, back when I was in the government, before we came to Brussels, we've prepared every year a report about pros and cons of the EU-Polish relations. And these results were always terrific, in favor, obviously.
So Poland has a lot of leadership it can show to the next group of enlargement countries, assuming everything moves forward.
Certainly, yes. But I think, you know, enlargement is one thing, but I think there is a bigger challenge in Europe these days. And this concerns this sort of, I would call it a brown wave of nationalism and populism, which has been now turned in Poland, but it's still very much present elsewhere. We are seeing high gains of AfD party in Germany. We may face a possible presidency of Marine Le Pen in France, which would be a very big challenge for Europe. So I think, you know, the biggest challenge for us will be to use the experience that we have now, from fresh experience from Poland, and how the narrative that created at the center stage of the political spectrum in Poland, to use his narrative about Europe, that Europe is actually able to sort out problems like, for example, the migration problem. Europe is now heavily investing in border protections and has redesigned its laws when it comes to handling irregular migration and helping countries of origin. So the question will be to take up this challenge and, first of all, deal with the migration crisis in a way that will sort it out for good, because we've been discussing it since 2015 when it hit us, when Tusk was the president of the European Council. We've actually discussed it night and day. And the current migration pact that is being now negotiated with the parliament is actually the intellectual outcome of that discussions, which basically focus on protecting the border and addressing the problem at its roots. And certainly rejecting the idea that was back then promoted by Angela Merkel and Jean-Claude Juncker of the mandatory relocation, with which Tusk had fought with this idea viciously, and he had a totally opposite intellectual stance. And apparently after a few months, and those leaders admitted that intellectually we were right. And now we see this new migration pact as a sort of outcome of many discussions we've had in Europe. But still, if you, for example, look at the EU-Tunisia deal, there is still a long way to go. And, you know, it's still not sorted out. So to revert this brown wave in Europe, we have to focus on sorting out migration. And second of all, getting the green transition right, because, you know, the costs to less affluent members of our societies are huge, and people are basically afraid that it's going to cost them too much. So we need to sort it out so that we do not inflate those populists and autocrats in Europe, and we provide a reasonable solution at the center stage of our political spectrum in Europe.
We could do a whole podcast on each of these issues, but I appreciate your efforts to tie them all together. As we close this conversation, what one idea would you like people to have about Poland going forward, Pavel?
Well, we are at a time of tremendous changes in global politics and in national politics. Some people are saying that we are in this period of interregnum, when the old order has diminished or is diminishing, but the new order is not yet ready. So we are in a very unstable reality, which is why we have to very much focus on the pragmatic parts of the policies that we have, namely those where people or societies are most fearful of, and these are migration and green transition, but also the whole social media bubble, and how the social media bubbles have actually divided our society.
So the new leaders of Poland will need to address the fears of voters as well as the economic possibility.
Yes, and we have time, because, you know, we will have a Polish presidency of the council as of 1st of January 2025, so we'll have some time to discuss these issues.
Marek, you've seen Poland move away from communism into the EU, into the law and justice era, now into this. How would you sum up where we are and where you hope we're heading as we send people on their way from this discussion?
Is your question about Poland?
You know, you've seen more than I have, so it's a little open-ended. What would you like people to take away from this? What one thought do you think you would like people to hold in their heads?
If you ask about broader perception, I think that is good news from the Polish election, that nationalistic populism is not eternal, that it may be defeated even in environment on unfair, uneven election, because we shouldn't forget that this election were unfair and uneven, with absolute dominance of the ruling party, Law and Justice Party, in media, in administration, with using what former Soviet Union often call administrative resources in their favor, with using hate propaganda like in Orwell 1984, etc. And despite all these obstacles, democratic opposition and most of society could win this election. I hope that this victory will be used for good purposes in Polish and European politics, but I also hope that it gives at least a slim of hope to other societies, like for example, Hungarian society, Turkish society, Russian society, that autocratic trend is not forever, and that even the most oppressive autocratic regime can be defeated by the consolidation of people, consolidation of society, and mobilization of society.
Exactly. It's a message of hope, and, you know, it's a beautiful story. You know, democracy wins and Poland is back.
On that note, thank you all for tuning into The Sound of Economics. We'll catch you next time. In the meantime, you can find this and many, many fine Bruegel publications at our website, Bruegel.org, and we hope to see you next time around. Thanks for listening.